may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Jim Fawnin, and I represent Delia Butler in this matter. And I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue presented in this appeal is not whether school boards have authority to employ teachers who have felony convictions. They do. Regardless of how Section 296.1 is interpreted, and regardless of when that teacher was hired. Indeed, the parties agree that if a teacher had submitted an application to a school board prior to July 1st, 1996, that school boards had authority to hire that teacher, notwithstanding a prior felony conviction. The parties also agree that if a school board hired a teacher after or on or after July 1st, 1996, and that teacher was convicted of a felony during their employment, that school boards continued to have authority to employ that teacher. We would not be here today if Ms. Butler had been convicted of her felony during her employment. Ironically, we're here today because Ms. Butler was convicted of a felony 14 years prior to the date that she was hired by Fairfax County School Board, and that is a fact that was known to Fairfax County School Board prior to the time that it hired her. The issue presented today is whether, as of July 1st, 1996, school boards are prohibited from hiring applicants for a teacher position who disclose a prior felony conviction.
As I look at the statute actually is backward-looking in time. You're suggesting that the felony or whatever the conviction that is involved has to be somehow during the course of employment. I don't see that in the statute. It says, as a condition of employment, which is extremely important language, the school board shall require on its application for employment a certification that the applicant has not been convicted of a felony. That's backwards related.
That is correct, Your Honor. So if we look just at that statute, the issue is whether at the time of employment that teacher already had a prior felony conviction. However, there's another statute, Section 307 of the Code, which relates to dismissals of teacher. And it says that teachers may be dismissed for incompetency, different things, convictions of a crime of moral turpitude, and felony. The very next sentence, which was added in 2008, says teachers shall be dismissed if they become the subject of a founded complaint of child abuse. So clearly drawing the distinction. And both parties agree that because 307 exists, that school boards have discretion to continue to employ a teacher who is convicted of a felony after their hire, while they're employed by the school system. So for 17 years following the enactment of Section 296.1, this school board interpreted Section 296.1 to allow it to hire and continue to employ teachers with prior felony convictions.
So did it interpret it that way, or did it just simply, remiss? And not going back. Do you have any sort of anything on the record indicating an affirmative interpretation of that?
Your Honor, it's stipulated that the relevant employees within the Human Resources Department believe that they had the authority to hire applicants with prior felony convictions, and that was the practice and procedure depending on the nature of the felony.
And if, in fact, they did not have such authority, where does that leave?
Well, first of all, it shows us that is how they were interpreting, and I say that because at the time and until today, the school board has delegated its authority to hire employees to the superintendent, who in turn delegated that authority to HR.
If you don't have authority to delegate, where does that leave you?
You mean if they didn't have authority to hire?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, well, you were talking about delegation. You don't have authority to delegate because you didn't have authority to hire.
If we didn't have authority to hire Ms. Butler at the time that she was hired, then I think we go back to the argument that the government or the school board here should be equitably estopped from terminating Ms. Butler based on the facts of these of this case.
And so that would mean that the school board doesn't have the authority to dismiss an employee that they violated the law on when they hired her. It just doesn't sound quite right. How could you not have the authority to correct a legal error?
I'm not sure I am.
How is it possible that there could be an unauthorized, unlawful hiring that you cannot later correct by dismissing that employee?
Well, no, I believe that you could, unless the circumstances show that it would be inequitable to have done so. In other words, here, the school board affirmatively represented to Ms. Butler at the time that she applied for her job that it had the authority to hire her.
And well, suppose, hypothetically, that's a mistake. Just suppose that. Are you saying that they could nonetheless keep her on?
Yes.
Indefinitely.
Yes, and the reason why I say that, Your Honor, is because this is a factually distinct case because it's not illegal or against any law for the school board to continue to employ a teacher notwithstanding a felony conviction. They can do that. They have the authority to do that. And so the end result of what happened here is not illegal. The school board could hire Ms. Butler and continue to employ her notwithstanding a felony conviction regardless of when she got it.
But you're ignoring the point that they seem not to have the authority to hire in the first place. If she's got that felony conviction before when she comes for the application.
But, Your Honor, they do. And the reason why I say that is this statute, if you read it, I'm not suggesting nobody did, but when you read the statute, it says, as a condition of employment, every school board shall require in its application certain certifications. So the condition of employment is that the school board act. The school board has to include these certifications on its application.
Well, and she could not certify that she has not been convicted of a felony at the time of the application.
And the statute itself doesn't provide a consequence for that. All the statute says is that the school board has to put these certifications on the application, and it says if you fraudulently respond as far as the applicant goes, they're subject to a crime. However, it doesn't say what happens if the applicant can't make that certification.
Well, the condition fails.
It says as a condition of
employment. And if the condition fails, then the contract is ultra vires.
Well, again, interpreting the statute, it doesn't say that as a condition of employment, the applicant has to make a certification. It says as a condition of employment, every school board shall require in its application those certifications.
So you're saying that the application form has to have the certification.
That is correct.
But it doesn't matter how the certification is filled.
That is correct. In other words, it's a data collection statute, just like its title says it is. And the other point I would like to make about that is even if it was a statutory prohibition, which I would suggest it is not, Ms. Butler's felony was not related to child abuse. And so in subsection 1 of that statute, it says that the applicant must certify that he or she has not been convicted of a felony or other offense involving children. And hers wasn't.
I apologize, go back to the earlier question. The certification is not certify whether or not, or disclose whether or not. It is certify that you have not been convicted.
That is correct.
Well, she could not do that, obviously.
Well, she could not make the certification that she has not been that she had not at the time been convicted of a felony.
Do you don't think the statute implies, if not expressly says, that it's a condition of employment that you have properly certified applicants?
I would suggest that she is properly certified. If she checked no, for example, it's accurately certified. I have been convicted of a felony.
But the certification is not whether or not certified that you have or certify that you haven't, whatever's true, it is certified that you haven't.
Well, let's go down that path then. If the certification, if it is a prohibition to hire someone who can't affirmatively make that certification in the positive that I have not, then I would suggest that what the statute is saying, that the applicant has to certify he or she has not been convicted of a felony relating to the abuse of children. And the reason why I say that is because it's within subsection 1 of that statute, it combines felonies with crimes against children.
With an or.
There is an or, Your Honor, but prior to that, in 1996, there was a prohibition against felons, crimes of moral turpitude, and then in 2003, the original version of this statute, and I don't think we should go there, but the proposed modification, wanted it all to be just tell us if this information is true. In other words, can people make the certification and school boards get the discretion, as I say, they continue to have.
If you follow that to its logical conclusion, a person who's an applicant could have committed child molestation, sexual molestation, physical or sexual abuse, or rape of a child, not be able to certify that they haven't, and the school board could still hire them.
Your Honor,
that's your view.
That's no different from what anybody's view is today, because 307, which talks about teachers, when you can dismiss a teacher, gives school boards discretion to continue to employ a felon that is convicted of that same crime you just talked about. So, in other words, there's discretion in the school boards every day, and they get to decide who to hire or not. There is no prohibition in the Virginia Code that would prohibit the school board from continuing to employ a teacher who is convicted of the crime that you just said.
You know, that just does not make any sense to me whatsoever.
Well, Your Honor, I think we all have to keep this in perspective, because if we interpret this statute the way the school board is now suggesting, then that there is no way that could be harmonized with the rest of the statutory scheme. First of all, the Board of Education no one could teach in the public school system without a license to teach in the Commonwealth, in the public schools of the Commonwealth of Virginia, from the Board of Education. Ms. Butler applied for a license to teach 4 years after the effective date of this statute, and the Board of Education granted Ms. Butler a license to teach after a hearing relating to her felony conviction. Now she has a license to teach in any public school in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Arlington hired her 4 years after the effective date of this statute. Fairfax hired her 12 or 13 years after the effective date of this statute. She's been employed, or was employed for over 7 years, was a successful teacher.
I understand all that. Are the seven of us on the Supreme Court of Virginia somehow bound by their mistake?
No. If it was a mistake, except if there is an ambiguity in the statute, then I think that their interpretation of the statute should be given great weight, because they're the ones charged with interpreting and implementing this statutory scheme. In fact, there's a step.
Where is the ambiguity? I mean, your original argument was that you can't harmonize 296 with 307. There actually is a way to harmonize it, but our job is not to tell the General Assembly, you know, we would have done it differently. Where's the ambiguity within 296?
The ambiguity is because it says, as a condition of employment, the school board shall place the certifications there. It doesn't say what happens depending on the response of the applicant. And second...
So your view is that 296 is nothing more than an information-gathering statute.
That's correct.
We want information to know. And I don't want to disparage your client. Everything from what I can see is that your client has really turned her life around after a very serious felony. But this is a hypothetical that doesn't involve your client. But we have gathered the information that this person, in fact, has any number of different felonies involving children. But we think this is a nice person, so we'll go ahead and hire him.
As long as they have a license issued by the Board of Education, then the answer to that question is yes. And again, the General Assembly hasn't prohibited school boards from continuing to employ teachers who are convicted of the very felony you're talking
about. And that's the 296-307 either an issue that you have referred to, but that doesn't make 296 ambiguous.
The General Assembly has decided to leave the hiring to leave the discretion to hire applicants for teaching positions within the individual school boards in the Commonwealth of Virginia, subject to the Board of Education having granted the teaching license. And here that's exactly what happened after full disclosure and, in fact, a hearing relating to Ms. Butler's. So.
All right. Thank you. Your time has expired.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Sona Rawari. I'm here for the Appalachian Fairfax County School Board. Section 22.1, 296.1A of the Code of Virginia prohibits school boards from hiring an applicant who has been convicted of a felony or of any offense involving the sexual molestation, physical or sexual abuse, or rape of a child. And if a school board does hire an applicant with such a criminal record, any employment contract with that person is ultra vires and void. The language of the statute, as the, one of your honors has observed, is unambiguous. The opening clause is a condition of employment, makes clear that the certifications are mandatory, and these certifications, while they have to be required by the school board on its application, can only be given by the applicant. So there's a duty, both on the school board, to require the certification, to obtain the certification, and for the applicant to provide that certification. So it's a dual obligation. And the statute distinguishes very serious offenses from less serious offenses. For felonies and sexual molestation, abuse, or rape of a child, the applicant must certify that he or she has not been convicted. For crimes of moral turpitude, the applicant must certify whether he or she has been convicted. And so a conviction of the more serious crimes is an automatic disqualifier, and the less serious crimes, the applicant only has to disclose those. Now, the court presumes that the General Assembly chose its words with care, and the evolution of the 2003 amendment that resulted in the distinction that you see in the statute proves that this is true. The plain language of this statute is confirmed by its history. And we provided all of the history in the addendum to our brief, and I'll just highlight the key points. The statute was first passed in 1985, and from the start, the statute required certification that the applicant has not been convicted of any offense involving the sexual molestation, physical or sexual abuse, or rape of a child. So these are the same offenses that have been in the statute from the very beginning. And then in 1996, over a decade later, the list of offenses was expanded to include felonies and crimes of moral turpitude. And what happened in 2003 was there was a proposal made to take of how to address crimes of moral turpitude. And the General Assembly took crimes of moral turpitude out of the absolute disqualifier and made those offenses only subject to disclosure. So now you have Romanet 1 that addresses felonies and the offenses against children, Romanet 2, which addresses crimes of moral turpitude. And that evolution of the 2003 amendment, how it came to the General Assembly, which is also in our addendum, shows that the General Assembly knew exactly what it was doing when it made this distinction. It considered and rejected a proposal to change the has not been convicted certification to whether has been convicted for all three categories of crimes. And that proposal was rejected.
In a sense, it's a legislative interpretation of its own statute.
I'm sorry?
In a sense, it's a legislative interpretation of its own statute.
Yes, and you can see this all happened within a month of this amendment being passed. The second proposal was, well, let's just take crimes of moral turpitude out altogether. That proposal failed. The third proposal was a floor substitute that took a middle ground and said, all right, we'll have crimes of moral turpitude still in the statute, but those will be a whether has been convicted, and felonies and the crimes against children that have been in the statute all along will remain has not been convicted. And so that evolution confirms what you see in the plain language, that for the serious crimes, an applicant has to certify that he or she has not been convicted, not just disclosure. That is, disclosure applies only to crimes of moral turpitude. We also noted in our papers that the plain reading is supported by an opinion of the Attorney General that was issued 8 years ago. In 2007, the Attorney General was asked to address subsection C of the statute, which applied to certification made to school boards by contractors who would have direct contact with children. The subsection was new at the time, it had been passed in 2006, but the operative language in that subsection was the same as subsection A, which originated the statute. And it said that prior to awarding a contract for the provision of services that require the contractor or its employees to have direct contact with children, that the school board should require the contractor to provide certification. Again, the language is exactly the same. He has not been convicted of a felony or any offense involving the sexual molestation or physical or sexual abuse or rape of a child, and Romanet 2, whether he has been convicted of a crime of moral turpitude. And the Attorney General began with the history of the statute. He observed that subsection C requires contractors and their employees to provide the same certification as that required of applicants for employment by the school board. And he concluded that that certification applies to all felonies and not just felonies against children, and the bidder who does not provide that certification cannot be awarded the contract. And just 3 months after that Attorney General opinion came out, the General Assembly changed subsection C. It changed the certification burdens on contractors, but it didn't touch subsection A. So it shows the General Assembly knew what the Attorney General had said about subsection C and how he had interpreted it in light of subsection A and its history, and had endorsed that interpretation.
You know, it seems to me, well, all that's very helpful, by the way, and the analysis is sound. But I'm not even sure it's necessary. The actual text of the statute says, as a condition of employment. If that phrase was not in there, I think he would be right. Because it would just say, here's what your application has to say. But the phrase, as a condition of employment, then recites a condition that cannot be met by this applicant. Because this applicant cannot say that she has not been convicted of a felony. And so it seems to me your recitation of the permutations of the statute, are accurate and they're very informative. But frankly, all they do is support the plain meaning of that statute.
And I wholeheartedly agree. That was our position in our papers, too, that if there's any doubt, you can look at this history, but the language is unambiguous. As a condition of employment is the key phrase in this contract, in the statute. And I know that Ms. Butler has tried to argue that there's a inconsistency between how the General Assembly has written 22.1307, which says that the teacher may be dismissed for conviction of a felony or a crime of moral turpitude, and the statute that we're here about today. And I would submit that that argument is really about the wisdom of a scheme that the General Assembly has chosen and not about whether there's an ambiguity in this statute.
And well, it seems to me that they can be harmonized by saying don't hire convicted felons from the outset. But if during the course of employment someone should be convicted of a felony, then on a case-by-case basis, you can evaluate whether to retain that person. You don't have to fire someone who's been convicted of a felony.
I totally agree with that. Exactly.
There are ranges of felonies. Some teacher who's been teaching for 30, 40 years goes into Nordstrom's, and I always say it's a factual and legal impossibility to commit petty larceny in Nordstrom's, shoplifts anything, and is convicted of a felony. Then the school board could be, if it wanted to be, merciful and charitable and retain that teacher despite having taken something worth $200 or more.
Absolutely. And the General Assembly made exactly that sort of line drawing when it passed the statute in 1985, because it applied to applicants. It didn't say, hey, go back and check everybody that's already in your employment and get rid of anybody who can't make the certification. And every time the statute's been amended, it's not been retroactive. So when felonies and crimes of moral turpitude were added in 1996 and then adjusted in 2003, it wasn't retroactive. So, yes, they drew a line somewhere, and they could have drawn a line elsewhere. But, again, that's a policy judgment. It doesn't change what we find in the statute itself. And this court has said time and again that the question is, what did the General Assembly intend in what they wrote, not what we think they should have written in the statute. And it's not possible to read the statute and really conclude that the General Assembly was indifferent as to applicants who certify that they have been convicted of a felony, that that is okay as well. Ms. Butler's also argued that the school board should be stopped from complying with the law and dismissing Ms. Butler. And a school board cannot expand its own authority intentionally or inadvertently. There's no dispute. In fact, on page 56 of joint appendix, the party's joint stipulation of facts and exhibits, and number 2 and 3 and 4 of those joint facts are there wasn't a policy by the school board. There wasn't a regulation by the school board saying we can hire felons. People in the HR department thought that they could. They believed in good faith that they could. And they're not unique in that. Arlington apparently thought it could as well. So, but the fact that the school board hired Ms. Butler cannot be a reason to require the school board to remain in non-compliance with the law. It's settled law by this court that estoppel cannot validate an ultra-virus contract made by or on behalf of a public body. And it rests on a very sound rationale. All persons dealing with a government entity are charged with notice of the limitations upon its power. And those limitations can't be nullified or circumvented under the guise of implying a contract, which is what estoppel is, an implied contract. And the law isn't chargeable with the absurdity of implying what the law itself forbids to do. So the school board should not be stopped to terminate a contract that it has realized was it did not have the authority to make. The code required every applicant for public school employment to certify that she or he has not been convicted of a felony as a condition of employment. Ms. Butler could not and did not make that certification, so the school board lacked the authority to hire her. And the doctrine of estoppel doesn't serve as a backstop to validate an ultra-virus contract. So we'd ask the court to affirm the judgment of the trial court.
Thank you very much. The court will be adjourned.
All rise.